All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. Friday's with Sandy Williams. Sandy, before we went to break, I was asking you about the supply chain problem. And that's another thing that won't get fixed fast, right?
Well, it's not going to get fixed fast, number one, because supply chains are very complicated, to the point now where I was talking to a young woman barista, and she was going to college. I said, what are you studying? And she said, supply chain. You know, it's so complex that business schools and have started students learning all about the complexities of how you put together a supply chain and how you sustain it. And I suppose it was a well-kept secret from consumers, because consumers just buy the product.
Right, right.
No one, they don't want to know what all goes behind producing it. But those who are involved in the production of things know that the supply chain is vital. And almost any product you make needs every part in it so it can go out the door. And missing one of those parts is as bad as missing half of the parts in terms of the ability to push the product out the door and sell it. And that's what's holding things up now. You know, automobile manufacturers might have access to 95% of the parts they need to build cars, but it's that last 5%. And so, and the international globalization of parts had a lot to do with greasing the skids on lowering the price of products, of increasing the ability to make complex products. People specialized. Most American cars have German Bosch products related to some of the sophisticated electronics in their cars, because Bosch has spent all this money researching and doing the R&D necessary to build up the capacity to build sophisticated things. The windshield wipers in your car that sense the rain and work automatically because of the rainfall on the windshield. That's a sophisticated part that was created not by General Motors or one of those folks. It was created by a specialized parts manufacturer.
So explain why used cars have gone up so high in purchase price.
Well, the fact is that in supply and demand, if something is short in supply and people want it and have the money to pay for it, they will bid the price up on the product. Used cars have always been a competitive bidding market, right? You buy a used car, and the car dealership that you buy it from, it acts as the broker who tries to make sure that you pay the highest price that the market is going to pay for the product, and persuade you to buy it because you go out and shopping and you go to this place and that place, and it's a bid.
And you're going to lose every time.
Well, the buyer is forced to try and use their shoe leather to go around and try and make the sellers bid against one another for them to buy it. And if there's a surplus of cars, then the price will get cheaper as they go down, because the car dealers will be eager to sell it. If there's a shortage of cars, the car dealer says, well, you know, you're going to have to pay for this car. You're going to have to pay more than the next guy who's going to come in and be willing to buy it, so the price gets bid up. New cars sell for the manufacturer's suggested retail price, and while some new car dealers have told people that they wanted them to put an additional dealer add-on price to reflect the shortage of the cars, most of the manufacturers are going around and leaning on the dealers and say, don't do that. If you do that, we're going to remove your dealership from you, because the deal we have with you is you're going to sell cars at no more than the manufacturer's suggested retail price, because that's the deal we have with our customers out there. That's the price for the car. And if you can get it for less than that from the dealer, more power to you, but that's the price. And so new cars tend to sell for their sticker price and don't get bid up because of the shortage. Used cars, they get bid up.
Well, you know, Sandy, I recall over the last several years, all these cars that were available that weren't sold, new cars, you see them advertised everywhere. We've got new cars from 2 years ago that didn't sell, and they're sitting somewhere, you know. I don't know if that was true, if that was fabricated, and if that's the case, there are plenty of those cars out there that didn't sell over the last several years. They didn't sell everything that they produced.
I'm not sure. My understanding is that the inventory of cars to be sold right now is short.
Right.
And so those cars must have been sold off in the process. I do know that if you can go to various car dealerships, particularly those who sell foreign cars that are in high demand, and you'll find on their lot a bunch of cars that are quite new that are for sale with 1,500 miles on the odometer.
Right.
Well, some of that's been done so that the car dealership can benefit from the price, because that car is going to sell for more than its sticker price.
But I've also seen many of the new car dealerships without a lot of, and newer car dealerships.
Well, they're desperately short of cars.
Yeah, they are. You look at the lots, and it's kind of amazing.
Oh, yeah, and you drive around. You used to be able to go into a new car dealership and dream about the new car. You could drive and look at the new cars that they had parked all around, the inventory. There's no inventory anymore. If you go into a new car dealership now and want to buy a car, you'll be ordering one, most likely.
But again, Sandy, I'm going back to all of the average people who want a new car, maybe could have afforded one 6 months ago. And now, same thing with the housing prices and watching now that all of a sudden we went from a buyer's market to now and a seller's market.
Yeah. Well, now, Frank, the last month, it looks like the housing market's cooling off. The rate of increase in prices has gone down substantially, but still, there's clear data to show that the price of housing is still materially above what it was a year ago. I think the average price increase has been materially double digit across the country from 12 months ago to now. And in the 20 and 30% range for many marketplaces. So we still have a seller's market going, but it's shifting in the direction of slowing way down. And that slowdown is going to be increased by the increase in interest rates for mortgages. Early on in the process, the home buyers who are so hot to buy a new house will decide that they will spend a higher percentage of their disposable income on housing than they had otherwise planned, and they'll continue to bid prices up for houses. But at some point, the squeeze is on, and the buyers say, I'm not going to spend that much of my disposable income, particularly since I'm worried about my disposable income next year going into a recession. People will make decisions to increase the percentage of the disposable income they're going to spend on housing when they're confident that their disposable income will be there next year. But if they become unconfident about that in a recession, all of a sudden the brakes get put on and the price of houses will stop rising.
So a year from now, Sandy, if you had a crystal ball, would we be looking at a better situation overall for the American people as it relates to, the economic realities that they face basis?
I mean, the fact is, the reason the housing market will cool is bad. It will be bad economic news in the economy. The reason that cars will become plentiful will not be necessarily married to a time when more people can afford to buy cars, because to beat inflation, you have to take money out of the pocket of buyers, okay? And the buyers are Tom, Dick, and Mary. And so the idea of a soft landing, economists talk about soft landings, moving from boom to recession with the rising interest rates, happening easily without a recession, soft landing, we call that.
All right, got to go to the break. 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams is here. We'll be back.